Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Shauna and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
And I'm Leo in London.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we get to know one another and experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We hope to increase the visibility of autistic therapists, to contribute to the evolving neurodiversity dialogue, and to co-create an engaging and dynamic space. We extend a wide welcome to all. You don't need to be autistic or to be a therapist to join us, and we trust you'll find something of interest and connection here.
We always stay in a hotel nearby.
Okay.
And we just found a new one, which is really, really lovely. Through a YouTuber, actually, staying in the same one, which is like an apartment hotel. It's very comfy and very private, and it's a good bolt hole. But I don't need it when I'm up there, I have to say. I'm very, very comfortable with that family.
Yeah, but it's nice to know where you're going to, isn't it?
Yes.
And the people who run it.
And I go back now, like 13 years of being with Rachel and staying with, because her folks live in Devon and brother in Cardiff. So there's all visits are overnight, at least.
Yeah. Is it hard for you to sort of switch off and properly relax?
Absolutely.
Whenever you're there. Even though they're lovely and you like being with them, it's that kind of need to need to withdraw and not even hear the sounds. For me, it's like not even hearing the sounds of other people.
I don't mind sound. In fact, I used to, as we were talking a couple of weeks ago, I used to like sound at night. Now, not so much. It's just being able. Yeah, I just can't totally switch off and be me. That would be my favourite. So in contrast to some of what you were experiencing, I enjoy travelling. Yeah. I like the movement and I enjoy journeys. But I really need to have freedom and independence while I'm away. So I love train journeys and I would probably get the train to these places, except that when I got there, I wouldn't have freedom of movement. So I'm always prefer to drive, which means I miss out on train journeys.
That's right. Because I that's what I find really hard is not having a car whenever I get to the place. So I think you're able to drive and then you have your car, not just a car, but your car with you that has all of your stuff in it. Because if you're anything like me, my car has my stuff and it's not just easy to drive another car because there's comfort things in the car and there's extra coats and there's warm things and there's extra tissues and, you know, things like that. There's things that I'm going to need and water and extra water and, you know, things like that. They're all there.
This is all identical.
All the same.
Even so specifically identical. In the boot of my car is a huge bag for life full of bottles of water that I constantly top up, fleece. I have now a shooting stick, which is like a walking stick that has a little fold out chair on it. I always forget to use it, but it's in the car.
It's there,
And then there's all the stuff to look after the dogs. There's spare, dry food and bowls and all their kit as well. I have, as I'm sure I've told you, a backpack which I sometimes carry, or a shoulder bag, but they have identical things in both. There's a whole set of which took me down the lovely. Have I talked about EDC before?
No, I don't think so.
Have a little look on YouTube. But basically, that's a little culty minimalist thing, and it stands for everyday carry. So it's all the little things. You try to assemble as small and compact a kit as possible, but it has everything you need in it. So there'll usually be a multi-tool and a power pack and some painkillers. I think for some people it's like a survivalist thing. That's not where I'm coming from with it. For me, it's just things.
Knowing that you have,
And utilitarianism and minimalism all kind of.
all together. Yes. Yeah, I have a box in the boot of the car, and it has lots of the things that you said, and like first aid kit, and like you said, painkillers and creams in case you need creams, just everything. Like it's got spare jeans in it, spare jeans for me and for my daughter in case, I don't know, we're out in the rain that I can hear outside now, and there's a lot of it doesn't get used, but when it does get used, it's so good to have it.
Yes.
And it just is like, I just knowing that it's all there, spare umbrellas, you know.
You're reminding me of all the other stuff that I forgot now.
It's there. Everything is there. And it's just not easy. If I'm driving another car, you know, I can't organize to take all that stuff. So then I'll always feel slightly vulnerable if I go out on a trip, even if I I've traveled somewhere and I've hired a car, it'll never have all of that stuff. It could never have all of that stuff. So it still doesn't feel like the same autonomy as there is in my own car. And there's something just about how familiar you get with your own car that, you know, you can drive almost anywhere in it. Yes. Whereas a new car, you don't know the exact length of it. You don't know exactly how quickly it goes through the gears or anything like that. My car's automatic. Do you drive automatic? Or do
I
you
do. I have done for automatic? About 15 years now.
Yeah. So even that, like having to drive a car that's manual again after so long of learning that and learning specifically what your car can do and can't do and things
this
like
is,
that.
See, again, just through this conversation, this is going to happen for the rest of my life, I think, that, you know, I've had a couple of more reframing realization. So one about the discomfort of staying in somebody's house and always insisting from earliest days of traveling about with Rachel that I want to stay in a hotel and as well knowing certain chains and what kind of mattress I'm gonna get, you know, all of that stuff. That's necessary. Now I have a better idea of why. And the new car thing, which is hugely relevant right now because my new car arrives on Tuesday.
Yes.
I'm very excited about that. I'm not worried. There's nothing about that worries me. I'm actually very excited at the fact that I get to repack the boot with kit fresh again from scratch. And I would always lay down all these rules, mostly to myself, you know, only the things that are supposed to be in the car stay in the car, and it's got to be all this particular essential kit, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
And then it accumulates.
Yeah.
So Tuesday's switchover, I'm actually quite excited about, but that also impacts the next few days because I've got to sort out tax and insurance, et cetera, et cetera, and the parking permit being swapped over from our car to the new one because we live in a residence permit street. I've got systems for all of this, of course.
I know you do, but there's a lot, and we need to almost like remember all of that, like you have, so then you're planning it in. You know, it's not just like, okay, here's the time that I get the car, and here's the time that the other one goes. And sometimes for some people, that's almost like, that's it. That's what's happening. You know, and it's like, well, no, actually, you know, there's all of the stuff around all of that I'm not just going to cram in at 11 o'clock at night or something, you know. God, but the temptation is that, you know, for some people who live their lives without this being a stress to do all those other things or without even conceiving of them. And maybe they don't get round to doing them for a while, like their insurance or things like that. But it feels like for some people that I hear talking about it, it's an inconvenience. It's an annoyance. But for me, it's more of a, well, that's going to take spoons. And so I need to plan for it. I can't 100%. It's not just an annoyance. It's actually, it's going to take time. And
it's a job.
And it's going to take something out of me. But I think, you know, I would be different if I was getting a new car. And of course, I was going to put all my stuff into it. And mine is not as neat as yours. My car is an absolute mess.
So you don't.
It wouldn't need to be.
You've seen my car, and I tidied it specially for you. I spent an hour in a big retail park car park tidying and hoovering my car before I went to pick you up.
I am very touched. It would not have mattered, only that you had to put Archaeus in it, but it wouldn't have mattered in that sense. But I mean that I don't have, like, you know, it's not minimalist or organized or anything like that. And there's still some were chairs in it and the some were rugged, even though that's not going to be used for this season, because it's storage and there's not necessarily somewhere in the house for that stuff. But so I can see how that can be exciting to do that whenever it's your car that's going to remain your car, as opposed to just like a temporary vehicle to drive. But I also feel like it's like whenever you get a new phone, or I'm going to need a new computer soon because this one is on its last legs. And it's like, in one way, it's exciting, but it's also a real pain because you get used to just working. Mm. I get used to just working with what I've got and not really aspiring to anything different until it dies. So, like, I drive my cars until they're 20 years old, then they die, and then I get another one. And it's kind of the same. Like, this laptop has been flashing up at me for about 6 months. My battery's about to die. I have lots of things like that. And I bought a new power pack for it, which seemed to satisfy it for a while, but now it's flashing some other things. So I know it's going to die, but I don't know, I don't have it. Even if I had the money for a laptop right now, I wouldn't want it because I would have to plan all of this time in to do the transfer. And then I would get annoyed at it for a good length of time until I got used to the new one. It's more like a needs must thing, like when my phone is not doing the things it needs to do, then it has to be replaced. But it's not really something that I look forward to doing. Like, I'm much, much, much more attached. It's like clothes. We talked before about things like that as well. Yeah. Like, only whenever something really has, you know, I've really finished with it, and then something new that passes all of the tests comes along, can I do a switch? It's not really an exciting thing to have new clothes just for the sake of having new clothes. And some of them obviously can become favourites very quickly. It's not like that. But I don't seem to have that excitement or drive or anything that sometimes I hear people talk about of, like, getting something and then that being so much better than what's gone before. Or I don't know, and I don't know if it's an autistic thing or not, but I just am very attached to things staying the way they are. Maybe it's that, just things staying the way they are, I guess that's the autistic element of isn't it?
The discomfort with what feels like very big change and adjustment. So I have the That's where for me ADHD is prominent and takes care of. I can be excited about that process.
That's right.
I'm looking forward to things like things like computers. That's a big deal because that for me, I know I have to, or even like a TV, anything that has lots of setup involved.
Yes.
Then that's going to be a weekend, like a whole proper chunk of time. I can't just do a switch over.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting too specific, probably.
I don't know.
Maybe this is very, very familiar and comforting to hear. I don't know. I've got a silly autistic story for you.
Yeah, go for it.
I just sipped my coffee and it reminded me. So I like coffee. It's one of my spins for the last, like, 5 years. So I love coffee. And I tried various kinds of beans and I liked the variety. Uh-huh. So I had a subscription service to a coffee roastery. Of course I did. So I had a subscription with a coffee roasters, a little one-man job. Uh-huh. And so every 2 weeks, then I doubled my intake. So it was every week I get a bag of whole coffee beans from somewhere in the world and from all over. And that's been happening for a long time. And whenever they send me a bag of beans labelled with when it was roasted and a bit of information on where it comes from.
Yeah.
And a little postcard customed to about that particular bean.
Lovely. Okay.
And I realised that I was collecting the cards, and then once I'd got half a dozen of them, I couldn't throw them away because they were part of Partly they're informational. What are the things, you know, what are the things that are my favourites? Am I learning that there are things in common, et cetera, et cetera, which did happen. So I looked online and I found a stationery company made a great big, what do you call it, binder with plastic pages in, specially for postcards. So I started putting them in the postcard thing. And probably, if I'm honest, it was about a year and a half ago, I realised, okay, I like Ethiopian coffee, particularly, or Ugandan, that bit of Africa makes my favourite coffee. So I don't need any more to be in this surprise subscription service. But if I stop, then the album is half empty. And I counted how many postcard compartments there were and realized I really had to carry on for another like year and a half.
And I
put my last postcard in last week and I suspended it. So they would send me a quarter of a kilo of beans a week, 250 grams. And now I know what I like. So I'll pick whatever. It's the same company. I decided because I've always liked their coffee and I picked their current Ethiopian, actually it's Ugandan coffee, and ordered a kilo of it. That'll do me for a month. Because I now don't need this, and I cancelled the subscription. So no more of this regular coffee. I will just buy coffee when I need it.
Yeah.
I'll buy it from them because I like their coffee and they bloody sent me a postcard with it. So I had to have a ritualistic tearing up of the postcard last night so that I didn't fall down another hole. That would trap me in a collection for another 4 years, because it took 4.5 years to fill my book.
Yes, this, listeners, is autism, Leo style. Because I was hoping partway through that story that you were saying, I've realized that I still have a year and a half left and I still have half of this book to fill or whatever. Mm. And I was thinking, well, perhaps I could like help you to wonder about possibilities.
To just stop now.
Or that potentially they would send you a card anyway and you could just fill it with different types of Ethiopian and Ugandan.
Not only that, I've just remembered the last week of my subscription should have been the week before last.
Okay.
And when the coffee arrived for the first time in nearly 5 years, there was no postcard in the envelope. So I had to extend it by a week. Had to. Do you hear my absolute language there that I would challenge if this was a client talking?
Yes, no, you had to, and you did not.
I chose to, and it made me happy. That's what
it made you happy. And now you have the story, and you have the book of postcards.
And I have a massive
for posterity.
Yes, if this ends up in the podcast, then I'll check the episode page at autisticlicense.com, and there'll be a photograph of me and my album of coffee postcards.
Yes.
Like we had my headphone collection the other week.
Yeah, we will have, yes.
What that brings to mind, that's a very boy presentation of autism. Mm-hmm. Collecting things, neat, ordered collections of a thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I recognise that.
Uh-huh.
And yet so much of my, I've said this before, I know, autistic experience has so much more in common, I think, with a female experience of autism, especially in the way that it's very, very invisible and the way that I've masked and the way that I have relationships, etc.
Yes.
And I'm conscious as I speak to you today with the coffee story, with the thing about the kit in my bags and my car, that actually paints a very misleading picture. I mean, not that it matters. I don't care if you or others, you know, think something, you'll learn differently eventually. But there's, my car is not neat. Things are not ordered.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything that I need is there. But just as you were saying, things left over that are no longer necessary are also there. There is chaos.
Yeah.
What I talk about when we talk are my intentions and the things that make me feel comfortable. But they're mostly intentional. There isn't consistency.
That's interesting.
Sorry, that's there isn't consistency.
Yeah, I heard that.
And I think that's also something that comes up in my client work a lot as well, is that because the autistic experience is so seemingly full of rules, well, no, it is full of rules or ways of managing our lives that we need mm-hmm. in order to mm-hmm. function or to be comfortable, etc., etc. People then expect consistency out of that when we explain them out loud, like I've been doing today.
Okay.
And yes. it's very rarely not there. And that's part of the difference. That's part of the neurodivergent difference, is that we don't follow that consistency is a neurotypical consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, example I was giving the other day in a session was explaining to somebody just after diagnosis, somebody close to me, about my autism. I've spoken to you about this. It was a big family do mm-hmm. in a venue. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining how my discomfort in those situations is that there's 200 people there and I can hear 100 conversations simultaneously in detail. I don't just get background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's overwhelming for me and very uncomfortable. And I get a real flea urge in those situations. Yes. And his totally reasonable but neurotypical response was, yeah, but we've gone to gigs together all our lives and they're really, really loud and they're much louder. How come you can put up with that, or actually more than put up with, really, really enjoy it?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favourite things. And, mm-hmm. and this kind of thing, which seems so innocuous. You know, that's a neurotypical measure of an expected level of consistency. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and that's a big part of the autistic experience. I explain that to an autistic person, that's no problem. I'm not questioned on it. That makes perfect sense. No. And that is consistent because it's not about decibels.
It's not about the level of the noise in that way. It's about the type of noise. And And it's interesting when you said about the consistency thing. But it works for the time that it works, even if it's only for a weekend or, you know, like there are these strategies that you maybe bring in to organise and to psychologically get through a challenge or, you know, a lot of things happening. But yeah, maybe it's the consistency thing where people expect that an autistic person will always, you know, if they're looking at children, right, they always line things up or they always mm-hmm. do this. And I suppose it's not that case that it's always. But for me, I think that I, things like that have come in for me at times of stress where stuff like that might be a bit more obvious. I remember actually, as an adult, pre-diagnosis, and my daughter was still small, and there was toys of hers that I was particularly attached to in a very autistic manner. They're called Lala Loopsies, and they're a type of little doll, which me and her, possibly more me, took great delight in collecting and sourcing. And yes, you can write that down or I can provide you with a photograph. So anyway, they were not popular, not popular at all. They were quite hard to source, but whenever you did source them, sometimes you could get really good deals on them. You know, they were quite cheap because they didn't really take off. And we had a massive collection. And there is a photograph of that day whenever I actually put them all in a line and it's along the top of the sofa. And I don't know, I have a kind of a vague memory of doing it, but the evidence is in that there's a photograph. So at some point, whenever all of those people were in the house and I was supposedly entertaining, but it wasn't a big entertaining, it wasn't like a meal or anything, it was probably just drinks and snacks. At some point, I found a way to line up all of those Lala Loopsies along the back of the sofa. Knowing that it was a situation which would have stressed me, that must have done something for me. Because I didn't always line them up.
This is amazing.
You know, I didn't.
Do you, Obviously, this is your call, but I'm wondering if you could lay your hands on the picture and if it's something that we might publish.
Maybe. If you had have had eyes to see, would you see the autism? But also, would you not only see like a stressed type of autism? So that's what I concerns me about how they diagnose children. And it's like, oh, this is autism because they're lining that up. And I'm thinking, well, I lined those dolls up because I was uncomfortable, because I needed something to do with my hands. I needed something that, because I knew the names of all of those dolls, it must have regulated me. And, you know, and this is, you know, this is a, I was in my 30s, late 30s, possibly even 40, you know. So like, and it wasn't done showy. There was no attention made off it. But I know it was me, it was not my daughter, and I know it would have been a stressful situation. So why would you diagnose a child or anyone based on how they are when they're stressed? And I feel like so many autistic children are stressed. And so they are diagnosed on the basis of how they act out their stress, you know, which might be by lining things up, or might be by stimming, or might be by, you know, whatever way, melting down. And these have become seen as traits of autism, when actually they're traits of autistic stress, or some people would say autistic trauma.
Yes.
But it's not actually autism. Autism is...
This is a very good point.
It's sad that even those kind of things are part of the stereotype, but actually if underneath it was a regulation stress thing, you know, the kinder thing would be around saying, oh, I must be pretty stressed right now because I've done that, you know, which is how now I was, when I saw that picture through the lens of having identified as autistic, I could say, oh my goodness, Shauna, you did that and you must have been really stressed. And it actually surprised me because it was so public, you know, there was other people around. I was obviously doing it while I was, you know, entertaining. And nobody said anything. Maybe I do it often. How do I know? You know, maybe I do things like that and people, you know, just like, that's Shauna doing her thing. But I certainly didn't know it about myself and didn't have the right interpretation of it until I looked through the eyes of the other side of it. And that, it just makes me sad that it's things like that, that we have a stereotype. So that's making me think even about your weekend upcoming. And I'm feeling like, you know, you're going somewhere that you want to go, people that you want to see. You're going to be with your wife, you know, you're going to have time together. Then there's a car coming and that's exciting. And there's things planned, you know, there's time planned for all of that. And you actually might be stressed about all of that. And maybe because you're stressed about all that, you're coming up with all these systems and you're talking about all these systems.
I've got a bowl of Mike and Ike's here. Mike and Ike's are American candy. I really like, and they sell them around the corner and they come in all, you get a mixed bag of all different flavours. My bowl now, it's going to mess up when I tilt it toward you, but I've eaten everything but three particular colours. And I've arranged, I've messed it up now, but I've arranged.
No, I understand. Are they three, like jelly, are they like jelly beans?
Yeah, they're very, but they are essentially jelly beans. They are basically jelly beans. And those are my three favourite flavours, which I've left till last. That's normal. Yes. But the fact that I'd arranged them without knowing it again in... See, again, my first instinct is to laugh, but you are exactly... So I noticed that as you were just talking. Because I think you're exactly right. These are all lovely things. There's nothing bad coming that I'm not looking... Actually, the kind of is. Some of the admin around the car is going to be a pain. And I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I'm actually... No, there's a really big thing, actually. I think I talked a little bit about when I used to lease a car on this family scheme, that every 9 months I had to return the car, and it was always I would lose sleep for several nights before because I was going to get told off, and I've got some of that because they're going to inspect our current car before they take it away.
Yes.
And I know there's three bits of damage, which I'm very happy to point out to them. I'm not trying to hide anything. Uh-huh. And I'll pay for it. And I'm happy to do that. Totally worth uh-huh. it. Uh-huh. But I am still, there is a dread, actually, in my stomach about the conversation that mm-hmm. I'm going to be told off. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to feel 7 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. That hadn't occurred. See, these things I'm still masking internally. Even with all this knowledge and experience and the conversations and...
Okay, but rewind a little
yes, bit. Yes, but nevertheless, what I'm saying is, despite that fact,
uh-huh.
there's still so much that's going on out of my awareness.
Which
would continue, actually, if it weren't for the conversations that I have, largely with you, but also in my practice, too. That's yeah. two-way. That's something yeah. I want to park and talk a lot about at some point with you, is about how useful disclosure is in that circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I go back
yes,
to
please.
Whenever you said you're still masking internally,
mm-hmm.
and you mean that, do you just mean that you weren't yet aware of the fact that you were carrying stress around that?
That's the bottom level of, or the top level. I don't know which way around. That's yeah, one level yeah. of it. But underneath is that I am aware of the behaviour.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think of it yet. I think I will from this moment on as a stress uh-huh. response.
Okay.
You know, it's still yes. playing back as you heard me. I laughed at the fruit bowl, yeah, the sweet bowl thing just then, because that's funny to me.
Yes.
And that yes. funny, that's masking though. Laughing through it is denying the yes. truth that there's something that needs to be dealt with here. There's an internal, very young voice, the same with being told off about the car.
Yes, yes, that's
there's
right.
There's a very
that's
young right. version of me that's not getting attended to.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Because the behaviour, uh-huh. I can explain it and I understand it and I can find it satisfying and or funny.
Yes, yes. It's like quirky. And it's like you could then distract very easily into, look what I do with my sweets. And
yeah, exactly.
And it would be very, very tempting for anybody with you to go down into that, because it's just fun to talk about.
Exactly.
And not to see the underneath.
But I've
said to you before, like, there's something around this masking word that almost seems cruel sometimes when we use it against ourselves. And I think that's why whenever you said, I'm still internally masking, there's like a criticism and a judgment about that.
That's true.
It's kind of coming from that place rather than I didn't know that about myself and now I feel compassionate towards 7-year-old me. There's a different quality of that, because we're always like learning what we don't yet know
mm-hmm.
about ourselves, whether we're autistic or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was just something about those words that mm-hmm. you know, the way that you challenged my words the other day. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just something about those words that just I felt like they're just not coming from a place that I want them to come from, or yes. they can coexist. I mean, there can obviously be, we all mm-hmm. have critical voices about ourselves, but that there is also, I mean, it might not be a 7-year-old just, but there is something underneath that of,
well, it's a very, it's a very powerful therapeutic intervention not to laugh along with someone who's laughing yes. at themselves.
Yeah.
And it's one of the most common ones that I can't.
That's right.
Up,
that we say
with.
Stop, but we mean it. Like what I did with you. Can we?
They'll
can
laugh we away back? And they'll be self-deprecating, yeah. and it's lovely and it's warm and it's a very attractive yes. quality in a person because they're yes. being very generous with themselves. However, what they're doing is not attending to themselves, not taking themselves seriously, and therefore nobody else does. And when we do that, our face either doesn't laugh along, or even more powerfully sometimes looks shocked or hurt, or, yes. you know, as long as that's an authentic response.
Yeah,
I absolutely let that leak out, because then mm-hmm. you think, okay, I'm actually worthy. I'm worthy of compassion yeah. and of attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At yes. the most extreme, pity. But I mean, that's not something you'd seek out. But you know what I mean? Yes. That can also be powerful.
Yeah. And I feel like I can't, as autistic people, you know, it could be just because of our way of processing, or it could as well be just not masking or not being able to mask, mm. you know, in terms of the response. Mm. Like, I don't know how to change my face into laughing along, mm-hmm. you know, so I'd have to almost, you know, backtrack myself if I wasn't talking to somebody who was open to sort of walk with me into what they might have meant, you know, mm-hmm. then it might then be kind of double backed on me, like, do you not get the joke, Shauna? Mm-hmm. You know, and mm-hmm. yeah. because and we've talked about that as well, you yes. know, it's like, it's really delicate ground, because as an autistic person, you maybe are really picking up on something that the other person isn't picking up on. Like, even if you weren't another autistic person and I was talking to a non-autistic person and my face showed that I was quite not okay with what they had said, and then I tried to share that, it could end up being yeah. me that was in the wrong, because I didn't know how to
yes.
go along yeah, yeah, with the joke. And that would totally lose the opportunity and the offering that the autistic person, because of our style of processing and the way our faces just kind of go along mm-hmm. that journey with us at the speed we're going along it. Like, we don't jump ahead and put on a smile. We stay with where we were in yes. our processing.
Yes.
That then, that's a gift to the world, actually. Yeah. But so often it's not validated. Mm-hmm. It's thrown back. You know, why are you overanalyzing that? Or why are you picking up on those two words? You know, do you not think it's really funny that I've got
yes, yes.
pink and orange beans in the, you know, or...
Or the La La Loopsies.
La La Loopsies, yes. They're so cool. I will send you a picture.
Yes.
And you can put a link wherever that's going to go in right. relation to this episode. There's something just before we finish that mm. I want to return to,
okay.
Because I feel like we sort of touched on it but didn't take the opportunity to expand.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in relation to kind of female autism.
Oh, yeah.
That we referred to male autism maybe earlier. Mm. I can't remember the exact thing
yeah.
that
yeah.
we said. And we probably already kind of have had discussions about that, but our listeners may be interested okay. for a little bit more
yeah.
Context around that. So yeah, I suppose I just wanted to say that, like, we don't really see there being a male autism and a female autism. Like, at the end of the day, autism is autism. It's
yeah,
you know, it's a neurological system that is not gendered. You know, so no matter where someone is on the gender continuum, no matter how they have been socialized or expected to be at any point in their life either, doesn't change whether they're autistic or not.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And their presentation is not a stereotype and can't be made into a stereotype either. I think it is kind of it's a misnomer whenever mm-hmm. people bandy about the term female autism, because really, I guess it's all to do with the intersection of
yeah.
being
yes.
Treated as a woman in this society, which causes certain expectations and which might lead to a different presentation that hasn't been picked up
yeah.
in the past
yes.
because the research has mainly been looking at white male children.
Mm.
So it's the same for the BIPOC community, women, queer community, I guess, you know, all marginalized groups are, you know, they haven't been privileged for to have had research carried out in relation to particular presentations. So therefore, it seemed to be new or it seemed to be different. And then it's almost like blamed on, well, with female, so-called female autism, it's sometimes kind of blamed on the women because, you know, you've hidden it, you've, this word again, you've masked it. When actually, no, it's just that you didn't look. And of course, if you're going to condition me to behave a certain way in society as a child because of the gender that you take me to be, then I'm going to adapt in particular ways that might be different than somebody that you're socializing to be in the male binary gender identity. So that's it. I just wanted to get that in before we finish.
Well put.
I know we have to go.
Okay.
So I shall see you next week.
See you next week. Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. We're very open to feedback and suggestions for future topics. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook, at autisticlicense.com, or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. We spell license the British way, L-I-C-E-N-C-E. If you're interested in therapy with an autistic counsellor, you can visit thrivingautistic.org.